Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast, Better Series, where we will explore top-of-mind topics and self-regulation with business and industry leaders. Together, we seek to understand the leading trends and innovations that continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Better Series podcast. I'm James Lee. I have a friend who is fond of saying that it's hard being anybody. That's especially true today for businesses which are struggling to find new customers and repeat sales. It's also true for the companies which have provided the products and services that support lead generation efforts, the publishers of advertising. For nearly 2 years now, the advertising marketplace that facilitates the give and take between buyers and sellers has been in near constant upheaval thanks to technology and privacy regulations. Consumers have developed an aversion to mass and highly targeted ads, giving rise to tools that block digital advertising. At the same time, new privacy laws in Europe and the United States give consumers more power than ever to block the use of their personal information for marketing purposes. What's a business which wants to advertise and a company that wants to sell advertising to do? Neil Thurman is with the Coalition for Better Ads, and he joins us today to talk about how we got here and what businesses can do to walk this tightrope. Welcome, Neil.
Thank you for having me, James.
Well, I guess we should level set so everybody is on the same starting point. So let's talk about how we got to this point where we have merchants who want to sell things and publishers that want to sell advertising to help these merchants. And then there's consumers. Everyone is in a different place and there is some level of conflict. So how did we get here?
Sure. So I think it's important to remember first that digital advertising is 25 years old, and that's maybe even an exaggeration in terms of like an actual mature marketplace. And in those 25 years, like any new channel or new type of business, it's evolved rapidly. And so I would say there's at least been three or four distinct phases of digital advertising in that relatively short amount of time. So initially you had digital advertising as direct relationships between advertisers and agencies and digital publishers. So almost technology mirroring the way it used to work with newspapers and television, et cetera. It was just a transition to online. I think the second phase, all of a sudden, there started to be some programmatic buying. So networks arose to represent sellers and match buyers and sellers. User-generated content really created an explosion of advertising inventory. So YouTube and blogs and the ease with which one could pull up and create their own website and publish to it, all of a sudden took down barriers, and you went from a few traditional media sources that everybody knew to having almost limitless options for where you might advertise. And that's where things like Google's ad network and others really came to the fore and started becoming dominant forces. So I think over those times, you've had kind of ebbs and flows of how the industry does business with each other and how people have understood their place in this new emerging marketplace. So I don't know that people are at conflict so much as everybody still is trying to figure out how they operate and what they think in this environment. And as you referred to in your introduction, we're now entering yet another era where regulations and specifically focused on privacy have come to the fore and are going to change the mix again.
The way you describe that, it just sounds almost overwhelming for a business person who's trying to decide where to advertise. I'm just trying to sell my stuff, and I have all these options, or as you said, nearly endless opportunities. And on the consumer side, they're just being bombarded at all times from all directions. Is that what gave rise to this concept of ad blockers and other forms of limiting that constant input?
So fortunately for advertisers and publishers, mobile ad blocking hasn't become much of a thing on mobile yet. and that's, you know, kind of technological barriers to that happening are a little steeper. That is not necessarily as true in Asia, but in North America and Europe, that's not as big a thing yet. And that's important for us as an industry to think about because we don't want it to become such. But to your first question, I think a lot of the issues that people do have, and part of the rise of ad blockers is all of that choice. But part of it was also the industry feeling its way around. Here's this powerful new tool, you know, related to grabbing your attention. It's not just an ad underneath your article that you could just visually ignore, or a TV ad that you kind of know what the rhythm of that is, and you can get up and go to the bathroom or get a snack or do whatever else you need to do. Ultimately, the digital channel provides a wealth of options for both collecting data and deploying that data to target advertising, but also how you present that advertising into people's overall digital experience. So I think the notion that people are rejecting the experience comes from a few different places. One is, you know, and I'm sure you've felt this way at some point in your digital journey, I'm just a little creeped out. It feels like that thing is following me too much or knows too much about me. Or it is, wow, that thing is really annoying. It's a pop-up ad that is getting in the way of me getting to the content I want. Or it's, you know, an autoplay video ad that comes with the sound defaulted to on, and all of a sudden I'm sitting quietly in my office doing something that maybe I shouldn't, like, you know, looking at ESPN, and here comes an ad and alerts everybody to the fact that I'm browsing. So, you know, there were kind of annoying experiences on one hand, and kind of freaky, kind of privacy bending experiences on the other. And I think both of those things started to build up some latent distrust among consumers. And then when ad blocking became an option in the middle of the last decade, people started saying, oh, well, maybe I do want to check out of this ecosystem.
I think we'd probably be remiss if we didn't sort of acknowledge that a lot of this has had a significant impact on the traditional platforms for advertising. You know, we recently saw the McClatchy newspaper chain declare bankruptcy. And, you know, we've seen a lot of newspapers and magazines either go online only or they folded up shop entirely. This is a global phenomenon, not just here in the U.S. either. But what has been the impact on this marketplace, Neil? And how has that particularly impacted the advertisers, the people who have goods and services that they're trying to promote to generate sales for their businesses?
Sure. So yeah, I think certainly all of the changes that have come along with digital have certainly impacted traditional media brands. There's an expectation that things should be free on the internet, and that has come with even more reliance on ad-supported activities, and that combine that with the ramp up in inventory, and all of a sudden you have rates that are going down, advertising rates that are going down, but more dependence on that revenue stream. So that's been very traumatic for traditional media companies. And I think the challenge that it has presented to marketers is how do you then go back and find those consumers in a trusted environment? I think you hear a lot in the industry these days about what's called brand safety. And the concern is, okay, I'm doing all of this programmatic buying, which is to say I am describing the type of consumer I want to connect with, but I haven't traditionally had as many things to say about where I find them. So what kind of content am I positioned next to? And that's changing quickly, but the industry has again had to evolve and realize that maybe it went a little too far in terms of the breadth and the scope of where it was placing ads and what it was placing them next to, and what information it was giving to marketers to make sure that they had some say in that part of the equation.
I want to dig in more about this idea that there is still room for advertisers and the platforms to work together to help consumers and to match up, you know, willing buyers and willing sellers. But before we get to that, you know, one dynamic we're seeing play out is this idea of consumer consent. Marketers and advertisers, you know, have moved so far past where consumers are comfortable, and now we're having to relearn. And you see that in regulations in Europe with the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation. And you see how now in the U.S. with the California Consumer Protection Act, the CCPA, Virginia is even considering a Privacy Act now that mirrors the CCPA, along with a couple of other states. So there is this concept that consumers are going to be giving their consent in ways they haven't in the past when it comes to marketing. How does all that factor into these dynamics where advertisers need to sell products and platforms need to help match up willing buyers and sellers?
Sure. And I think there's still a lot to be learned. I mean, all of these things, CCPA just went into effect on the first of the year. Obviously, as you referenced, Virginia and I think Nevada and a number of other states are kind of on the verge. And I think that is going to require that everybody figure out what can we do now. And Google's announcement a few weeks ago that they would be sunsetting the ability to use third-party cookies, you know, takes yet another creates another pivot point. So all of a sudden, third-party cookies, where advertisers would gain a lot of the information as that traveled with you around the web. All of a sudden is not going to be available as an option. So I think for publishers, this is actually probably good news, especially traditional publishers, because it all of a sudden they are a resource again. The publishers that have scale and have the resources to understand who their users are and maybe the sophistication to create some context around the content that they publish. We'll have an opportunity to provide that to advertisers to say, well, I understand that Neil is arriving at this site. I know this about, I know he lives in Virginia and he has told me he enjoys these types of activities. He's read these types of articles and he is now currently reading something about the Washington Nationals. And therefore I can give you both some first party data. So first party data is not something that we're regulating, and I can also give you the context of the type of article he's reading, and putting those together, I think that will be a powerful thing for kind of the traditional premium publisher. I think where there may be less power is in some of the what has been called the long tail of the internet, where they may not have the resources to gather that data and to understand consent frameworks and things like that. In terms of marketers, I think that marketers are incredibly resilient, as are the companies that serve them, in terms of figuring out new channels to get to customers. They have had the benefit of letting the industry play out and the intermediaries and the publishers having to figure out this brave new world and then have everybody come back to them and say, here's what we have now and here's how we can serve you best. So I think marketers will have to be patient and monitor how the industry is changing. But I think they are in the catbird seat to some extent to kind of allow innovation to happen and get to experiment a little bit as new features and kind of the winners and the losers emerge from the technology changes.
It sounds to me, Neil, my words, not yours, that this is an opportunity for businesses and publishers and platforms to return to the good old days of customer service. So a transaction becomes more about the experience than that the consumer has when they're interacting with a business, from that first interaction that may be online to the last, whether that's in the store or it continues to be online. So is that where we're headed, back to customer service and relationships?
I think so. And I think for media companies, it's actually a little bit of a new thing. I think if you think about retail or other things that have been in person in the past, there's been a rich history of customer service. And I came up through customer service aspects of various businesses. And I understand the value of that and think that always should be on people's minds. It hasn't all media hasn't always been a relationship building business, though. I think, you know, if you think back to your newspaper or your television, you know, your cable company might know what address you live at and what channels you subscribe to. Your newspaper obviously knows your address, but it hasn't been a deep relationship business, even as it's moved digitally. So I think this is really the opportunity, and the winners that come out of this will be the ones that remodel their businesses to really understand consumer relationships, to be able to talk about that back and forth and saying, this is the information that I'm willing to share. This is, you know, the publisher talking about, this is what we're going to do with it, and making sure that their customers are okay with that. I'm sure you've clicked on and passed 100,000 privacy policies in your time. I know I have, and I don't have any idea what any of them say. So I've probably already consented to a lot of things. The question is, how will the industry react and start to tell people these things in plain English, rather than pages and pages of legalese, and make them comfortable with this new relationship that regulations are going to require that they have. So I think that's, if I'm thinking about the business changes that I want to make and the way I want to address my customers, it's all going to be about establishing that relationship. And I think the same applies to marketers, who are probably a little more familiar with this concept, because the extent to which they can go direct and have direct relationships with their consumers after they come into the funnel, I think is also going to be important.
Thanks, Neil, for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me, James.
And thank you for listening to the BBB National Program's Better Series. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Better Series by visiting our website, bbbprograms.org. Then click on the podcast tab. You'll find all of our episodes there, where you can listen on your Apple Podcast app or your favorite streaming platform.
You just enjoyed the Better Series podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcast@bbbnp.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.